Welcome to At Altitude. At a recent sewing-on ceremony for one of my coworkers, she offered up praise for a past supervisor who had taken her aside when she was a knucklehead A1C, her words, not mine, and said to her, "As my airman, you can be outstanding, or you can be outstanding by the gate. It's up to you." Now, Tech Sergeant Janiqua Robinson chose the first option, and as a result, she is the one who conducted the following interview with an airman as outstanding as they come, Joanne Bass, Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force. Bass speaks quite often of the responsibilities of being in the SIMSAF seat, which strikes me as being a somewhat ironic turn of phrase, as even if seated, she doesn't seem to be doing a lot of sitting around. As with any NCO, she must amplify command intent down the chain of command, and amplify the health, welfare, readiness, and utilization of her subordinate airmen up the chain of command. The difference is, she performs this function for the Secretary and Chief of Staff of the Air Force and more than 680,000 total force airmen. Certainly, she and her staff gather input from airmen virtually, but she seems to prioritize engaging with those airmen face-to-face, traveling the world to hear their ideas and opinions, and collectively give them a singular voice up the chain of command. Conversely, she leaves no doubt with her airmen that in order to deter and defeat, if necessary, peer adversaries like China and Russia, they must be outstanding with an aggressive pursuit of being the most lethal weapon system the world has ever known, a United States airman. She has expectations and empathy, standards and support, purpose and a plan to ensure the most educated, talented, capable force in the history of warfare grows to maintain and expand upon that superiority in 2030 and beyond. I can't wait to hear all about it. I'm Joe Edens, and you are at Altitude.
Right, it is great to meet you this morning.
It's good to meet you too, Sergeant Robinson.
Yes, yes, we're gonna have a great time. So for Airmen Straight Out of Basic, can you talk a little bit about your role and then your scope of responsibility?
Absolutely. For our Airmen Out of Basic or for the general public, what I want them to know that I do is, as the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, I have the honor and the privilege to represent our over 680,000 total force airmen in the United States Air Force. And as such, I'm also the principal advisor on their health, welfare, readiness, and the utilization of all of them to our Secretary of the Air Force, as well as the Chief of Staff of the Air Force.
What does that look like day to day?
That looks like a whole lot of meetings at times, balanced with the opportunity to go and spend time with our airmen to hear from them directly, right? I can't be a great advisor and represent them well if I don't actually understand the things that are going on in our Air Force from the most tactical level up to the operational level and then the strategic level. So I spend a lot of time traveling on the road to be able to hear the voices and talk with our airmen and their families, and then also, again, as I mentioned, be able to come back and be in the rooms and in the meetings where we are discussing the way forward as it relates to the force of the future.
So when we talk about the future force and everything, a lot has happened in your tenure.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges that your team has faced and how you guys have overcome those to get the mission done?
Yeah. Before I talk about any challenges that our team faces, I always love to talk about opportunities and the goodness of the things that have happened during the time we've been in the seat. One of the things that I'm probably most proud of since I've been in the seat is our Enlisted Force Development Action Plan. And what that is, in layman terms, if you will, is really how do we grow the force that we're going to need in 2030 and beyond. And while we know that today's force is the most smartest, educated, talented force in history, how do we make sure we're still going to continue to be that force? And so we rolled out the Enlisted Force Development Action Plan, which actually started as a strategy. And we decided, you know, we've got to put some action behind it. So let's call it an action plan. And it has 28 objectives. And those objectives were really focused on how we are going to develop our force to, again, continue to be the competitive edge and the competitive advantage that we're going to need for our Air Force as it comes out. So that's one of the things I'm probably most proud of during our time. And when we talk about the challenges that we've probably had at this particular time, that I might, you know, offer all Chief Masters of the Air Force probably felt the same way, is sometimes a bureaucracy that can seep in that doesn't allow you to change at the speed and the scale that you really need to. General Brown calls that Action Order B, bureaucracy. It's alive and well. And while some bureaucracy is good because it helps give us our right and left boundaries, the bureaucracy that doesn't let us go from here to there and to modernize our force at the speed that we need to be relevant is painful.
So with that, you mentioned the Enlisted Force Development Action Plan. You guys also, let out a couple of other foundational documents. Can you talk a little bit to their importance and why airmen need to develop those kind of skills?
We did. From the Enlisted Force Development Action Plan, we rolled out a few foundational documents. The Brown Book, the Blue Book, a brand new Purple Book, and then also a blueprint. And I'm pretty proud of those foundational documents because first and foremost, it reminds us that we are in a profession of arms, right? Like, we're not working for Google or, you know, you name the company. We are part of a profession that asks America's sons and daughters to, you know, perhaps even pay the ultimate sacrifice. And so this is really a profession of arms. And so those foundational documents outline that. But the other thing that they do is speak to our values on who we are as part of this this profession of arms. It also speaks to what is at stake, and every airman has to understand what's at stake. And what's at stake really is, you know, being able to be a group of people, America's sons and daughters, who are safeguarding our freedom to deter anybody from trying to do anything to our nation. And so those foundational documents really set the stage for every airman to understand what their role is in our nation's defense.
So you mentioned this being a profession of arms. Why is it so important that we remain an all-volunteer force?
Well, when it comes to being an all-volunteer force, we're seeing the opposite right now play out with the Ukraine and Russia war. And you know, we're seeing the opposite play out with Russia, where they do not have an all-volunteer force. And we see the quality of their force and what is happening in full effect. When for us, you know, we've been an all-volunteer force for over 50 years, and that is truly what makes us so great. People want to serve. And when you have people who want to serve their nation and they understand a bigger and higher calling, if you will, that directly impacts the quality of the recruit and service member that we have. But it also has a direct correlation to the readiness that we have as again, service members, sons and daughters are willing to even give their life for this nation.
So when we talk about readiness, we're kind of shifting gears a little bit. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a spectrum of resilience. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how that is going to help airmen better deal with the stressors that come with being a part of the Air Force?
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of the spectrum of resilience, mostly because while the spectrum of resilience is a program, what we know is programs don't save lives, people save lives. And so when you look at the entire spectrum of resilience, it starts with self, then it goes to family, then it goes to peers, and then it goes to support entities and support agencies, and then it goes to mental and medical help support that is needed. And when a person will rely on that entire spectrum, then perhaps they don't have to go all the way to the far right where the mental health support is needed, right? When it comes to resiliency, I'm a big fan of the comprehensive airman fitness pillars, right? How to take care of myself, because if I can focus on taking care of myself, that's the majority of the work right there as it relates to resiliency. But on those days where I need something more than myself, then I have my family there and my loved ones. And if I don't feel comfortable, or maybe they, you know, are missing out on some of the signs that I have, then you have your peer group, right? Your wingmen and your coworkers and the people that you work and spend most of your time with are right there. Or maybe it's, you know, your bowling crew or the book club or whatever. You have a peer group. And so that's part of that spectrum of resilience. And then, of course, the Air Force Enterprise provides support too through our support entities, the chaplain, our counselors, and One Source, right? Like, all of those are part of the support agencies. And then, of course, your medical and mental health. And so if we would just capitalize on that entire spectrum, which, by the way, throughout my 30-year career, I totally have, right? I've tapped into my family and my peer group, and also see the chaplain once a month, right? All those things are important. That spectrum has taken care of me well, where, again, if you utilize that, I think it'll build a more resilient force.
I was listening to one of your coffee talks, and you mentioned that if airmen wanted to know what kind of keeps you up at night, that we should listen to the kill chain. And I did. And so some of the problems that were listed from the technological standpoint and guarding those against our adversaries kind of, you know, made me a little weary or a little worried about our security. Can you speak a little bit to those problems that were listed and whether or not, you know, we've kind of overcome those or whether new ones have taken their place?
Absolutely. So kind of where we are from a geopolitical standpoint and the challenges that our nation faces absolutely concern me, right? However, I'm pretty confident in today's airmen and our service members writ large, and have a high degree of confidence that our airmen will never fail. What really keeps me up at night and what really concerns me is the thought that we could lose one of our fellow brothers and sisters, whether it's through war fighting or whether it's through an accident or whether it's through one of them have just lost hope and that's the only way that they see out. That is what really keeps me up at night. Absolutely being concerned about the challenges that we face as it relates to the kill chain are important, and that is what we do in our nation's business. But it's really the health and welfare of our service members that keeps me up at night.
Can you speak a little bit to how you deal with that, the weight of that kind of pressure?
So when it comes to the weight of the pressure of the welfare of our service members, we just, you know, just like every single one of our folks, we put our pants on and we go to work and we do our best to make sure that in however we are serving or however we're leading, we are actually doing our best to make sure that we've set the conditions so that our people can thrive and focus on the things that they have to focus on, which is really readiness.
All right. So also, what do you think, from your point of view, keeps our adversaries up at night?
I think what keeps our adversaries up at night are our people, our airmen, our service members, and it makes them think twice about trying to do something to the United States of America today. That is what keeps them up at night.
So with that, you added another book to your reading list, which was The Long Game. And it's about China's long strategic strategy to displace American order. Can you speak a little bit to, there's a quote that they keep repeating in there that whatever the enemy is afraid of, we'll develop that. Can you talk a little bit to why, you know, that kind of strategy, they find it helpful and what we're doing to kind of outmatch that?
Yeah. Sarah Robinson, I love that you're reading all these books, by the way. Absolutely. So when it comes to the strategy that our pacing challenge has, we have to be very well aware that they've been taking note for a long time watching us. And the PRC is very well aware that our competitive advantage and the reason why they think twice is our people. And so because of that, they've absolutely taken the strategy to focus on how they develop their force as well. And so we have to go in it wide-eyed and fully aware that they are looking to grow their force, a more educated force, that they are developing them now with NCO academies, where they used to recruit once a year, they're recruiting twice a year, and the second time that they're recruiting is right after college or university graduation. We have to know that they are also taking note into what is going well and what's not going well as it relates to China and Russia and Ukraine. And so because of that, they will focus on perhaps what people may say is their weakest link to really follow suit in the things that have made us the strongest military in the world. One thing's important to note, right? Like Russia and China do not trust nor empower their force, their enlisted force specifically, where we do, right? We realize that the strength of our force is in our NCO Corps, the folks who wear stripes. And because of that, we believe in mission command. We believe in empowerment at the most junior level. That is the reason why, one of the reasons why our force is so strong and our force is so great, because again, we trust our people and we empower them with the responsibilities that they have with safeguarding our nation.
That is rough to hear.
Yeah,
it's definitely concerning.
Absolutely.
All right. So with that, right, it's not just the Air Force, right? It's also our allies and partners. Can you speak a little bit to the security cooperation effort that we have both in Europe and in South America?
Absolutely. The challenges that we face as a nation are not just our own. The challenges really are every other nation has the challenges that we have as it were with respect to world order. And so it is really essential, if you will, for us to have strong relationships with our partners and our allies. And we're having that at multiple levels, security cooperation, engagements, any opportunity that we can, so that we have strong foundational relationships that are meaningful and genuine. And we've been doing this for a long time. In fact, if I can just talk about one initiative that the Air Force has, or in fact that our military has as it relates to state partnership programs. Since 1993, Army National Guard and Air National Guard have spent time with their partner nations in training together, educating together, developing together to help make both nations a stronger force. And so we've been doing security cooperation for many, many years, and it continues to pay dividends because we know fundamentally that we are stronger together, and that overall helps maintain good order and discipline and readiness across the globe.
Digging into that a little bit, a lot of the times people understand what partner nations get out of partnering with us, but they don't kind of see the benefit that helps us. Can you speak a little bit to that?
I think there is so much that we can learn from each other as it relates to our partner nations. In fact, I spend a lot of time with my counterparts from other nations. Some of the other nations have really phenomenal ways that they're getting after agile combat employment or multi-capable airmen. They might call it something different, but in any case, many of these other nations have been doing it for years and years, and the more that we could cooperate with them and also learn from the strengths that they have, the understanding of cultural differences or cultural norms, the understandings of terrain, the understanding of warfighting, the more we can do that together, the better off we'll be. And so when we, as we have these relationships with our partners, it is, mutual on what can we learn from each other.
Right. So you mentioned them having those multi-capable and ACE things. Can you speak a little bit to the future operating concept and a little bit to what being employed in place will mean for airmen in that kind of spectrum of operations?
Absolutely. When it comes to future operating concepts, what I will say is nothing has changed as it relates to warfare except how we will fight. And so the foundation stays the same, the means of which will be different. And so it's important for airmen to understand that. It's important for us to help train and create a ready airman that understands what that how is going to look like. And our airmen are critical to this because they're going to help determine what that how is today and 5 years from now and 10 years from now. Every single airman will help us define how to become that ready force that we're going to need as it relates to future operating.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so can you speak a little bit to what employed in place will look like?
When it comes to employed in place, I think broader than that, if I can, what I would share is we have to be thoughtful that how we might compete in the future or what warfighting might look like in the future. We have to realize that employed in place is going to be a thing. We have many of our airmen today supporting space operations or some of our nuclear global strike capabilities. They're already employed in place and making sure that those missions are 24/7, 7 days a week. We will also have segments of our population that are also focused on agile combat employment, and they're going to be able to roll out in smaller, leaner, more agile cohorts, if you will, not in mass, to be able to get after what that looks like. And then we've got to be able to, again, cover down on any and all domains and be able to execute it in a way where, whether it's employed in place, deployed operations, a bit in mass, or really from an agile combat employment standpoint, how we get after warfighting, we're going to have to prepare our airmen for.
Mm-hmm. So notably, during the Air and Space Symposium, there was kind of a shift in some of the language that leadership was using, moving kind of from a kill chain to a kill web. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit about what the difference is and why that shift is necessary?
Yeah, really, when we're talking about a kill chain, we're kind of thinking single modalities and a single way to be able to get after this. When you think about kill web, there are multiple ways that we're going to have to be able to get after this and multiple domains that we're going to have to cover down on. And so in this thing called a kill web, our Air Force and our military writ large is really going to have to be focused on all the different ways for which we have to prepare for warfare. So when it comes to the kill web, I think one important aspect of that is really understanding that it is multifaceted. And so when you look at AFWERGEN, when you look at multi-capable airmen, when you look at even JADC2 and the way that we connect and communicate, right, that is going to cross all barriers. And really what it's going to be is multi-agency, joint force, international partners all woven together to be able to get after everything that we're going to have to get after as it relates to being able to defend our nations.
Would you mind kind of painting a picture of a scenario where that's important, like just weaving in, you know, what the joint force can accomplish as a whole when we work together?
Well, I will tell you, as it relates to future warfare, we will never fight alone. You know, we are always going to be reliant on the joint force. I talk about it all the time when I say our pacing challenge is not interested in beating the United States Air Force. They're interested in becoming the world dominant power. And so to that end, they'll use any and all modalities and any and all means. And so that means that our joint force is going to have to be strong. But that's and while the joint force is going to have to be strong, we're going to really have to get after a whole of nation and a whole of society effort that you read about in the kill chain, because it's going to take our whole nation and society to be able to ensure that we are a strong force and able to continue being the nation that our people are going to need.
Most notably, during the Air and Space Symposium, you were on a panel and you kind of, they had a lightning round where they asked you to answer a question in 5 words or less.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that you answered was, what does every airman need to know about the next fight?
Yeah.
And you answered saying, our adversaries will not fight fair.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit on why all of us need to know that and what that will look like?
I'm so glad you told me what my 5 words were, because I forgot. You know, I share all the time that our adversaries will never fight a fair fight. We fight fair. The United States military will always fight fair. We have a code of conduct. We have standards of ethics. And so because of that, we fight fair. But our adversaries will never do that. They will use any and all domains to be able to get after their objective, whatever that might be. And so we've got to be fully prepared in air, land, sea, space, cyber, and information. And we are going to have to grow airmen who understand all those warfighting domains and are ready to be able to defend in any and all domains.
So, as a SIMSAF, when you look back over your career and when you look back over your tenure, you kind of got into this a little bit earlier, but I wanted to dive deeper into what you're most proud of.
I'm proud of so many things. Having had the opportunity to sit in this position as the Chief Master of the Air Force, probably a few of them are that I'm really proud at how we have moved the ball when it comes to strategic IQ. And what I mean is really going across a force and making sure that every airman from E1 to E9 and, you know, our company grade officers as well as our civilians, regardless of AFSC, understand what is at stake. I think that that is probably one of the things that I'll be most proud of, how we move the ball on that and making sure that our airmen understand what we are talking about when we talk about our pacing challenges and strategic competitors. We've done a lot of work on that end with some of the foundational documents that we've rolled out. The other thing that I'm always so proud of is the caliber of airmen that are serving in today's force. They are the most educated, talented, capable force in history. That is who is serving and protecting our nation today. And that is really inspiring.
Just to hit the hammer home, can you talk a little bit about what is at stake?
When we talk about what's at stake, it is important for every airman to understand that our pacing challenge, the PRC, has put a stake in the ground, and they've told us essentially in 2049 they will take their rightful stand and become the world dominant power. Every airman has to understand that. And they have to understand that the PRC, the PLA, is executing that strategy really well. They've been laser focused on it, and everything that they are doing is to get after that strategy. And if you talk to some of our intel folks, what they'll tell you is they're actually about 15 to 20 years ahead of time. And so time is not on our side. You know, the things that we do in our Air Force have got to be focused on modernizing our force to be what our nation is going to need when called upon, and doing that at the same time where we are integrating by design with our sister services so that we can bring the effects that we are going to need to, again, be able to deter, be able to compete, and be able to win if we ever have to.
Looking ahead, what are some of the things that you're still looking to accomplish that will kind of put you at ease when you leave the seat? That will kind of ease those like nervous worries about where the force is going to be when you leave it?
You know, I actually don't have concerns about leaving our Air Force when I do take this uniform off. And I don't know that you ever quit being a United States Airman, by the way, but I do not have concerns. I am encouraged by the caliber of airmen that we have serving today. And I am full of hope in our staff sergeants and our tech sergeants and our captains and majors and our civilian teammates that they are going to be able to lead us through any challenges that may come our way, and that they will lead us to the force of the future to be able to ensure that we have the Air Force that our nation is going to need. And so that is truly inspiring. And so with that, again, it's going to be our people who see us through any of the problem sets that we may have in the future.
I was holding my breath.
I know.
It always makes me nervous because I'm like, what should I be looking out for?
Yeah.
All right. So with that, is there anything else that we should have asked you that we didn't, or anything else you'd like to add?
I want to talk about my priorities.
Awesome. Let's
Okay, good, good. As the Chief Master in the Air Force, you know, I am focused on probably everything that impacts our airmen and their families. In fact, it's always interesting to me. I always appreciate when I hear, I wonder if Chief Bass knows about this. The answer is yes, right? Like, again, anything that impacts our airmen, their families, their fellow wingmen are things that concern me. But there's probably three things that really have my attention, and that is the force of the future, military pay and compensation, and healthcare. I will spend a lot of time this year and for the rest of my tenure focused on those things. What does our force need to look like in the future to be able to defend our nation and be the air force that our nation is going to need when called upon? And how do we make sure that our force continues to be an all-volunteer force? Those are all things that are super important to me. And how we recruit and how we retain will all impact that all-volunteer force that we are going to have. What else impacts that all-volunteer force is pay and compensation. As I've mentioned several times, the force that we have today is the most educated, most talented, and capable force in history. And we've got to look at how we pay, compensate, and incentivize this all-volunteer force. We've also have to figure out in 2023 and 2024 how we can modernize the way we assess things like BAH, COLA, OHA. All of those things matter. And when our airmen are focused on those things more than they are the things that we've asked them to do for their nation, that's never a good mix. And then the third thing that I'm really focused on is healthcare. Healthcare directly impacts our readiness. Airmen have got to be able to have adequate, available, and quality healthcare. We also are going to have to put some brain cells to making sure that we have policies that are written up so that our airmen and their family members as well are able to get non-traditional healthcare. You know, it's 2023. We've got to be able to look into virtual options and other means. And so being able to, again, provide for healthcare in a way that our airmen don't have to focus on those things, we're going to have to do. And so I'll focus on those three things, the force of the future, military pay and compensation, healthcare, as well as all the other things that are important to you and are important to your fellow wingmen.
That kind of jogged my memory a bit. I was watching your congressional testimony, and you were talking about how no airman should be on a SNAP or any of those programs. If you don't have to, but if you could dig into that a little bit to just kind of explain why that is an issue, or what you got, what that, I think there's like a pay review that's coming up, what that means and what that's going to do for service members who are experiencing that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the initiatives that myself and the my fellow service SEAs have been pushing is the 14th Quadrennial Review of Military Compensation. And what that is just taking a holistic look at pay and compensation for service members. And so we're happy for that. That will be a committee, if you will, that is focused on all of those things. Separate from that, we are also asking for a holistic look at pay and compensation that might be faster than that 14th QRMC. Again, the things that we do today or the things that we don't do today really do matter, and it matters when it comes to that all-volunteer force. When you think about our most competitive advantage, which is our people. Our people should never have to be on food stamps. Our people should never have to receive additional support from the federal government because they are not making enough as it relates to base pay. And so that is something that the Department of Defense is going to have to really put some brain power to make sure that we are taking care of American sons and daughters. I'll never forget when my dad encouraged me to join the military. He's like, hey, the military will pay for a roof over your head, food to eat, and health care. And so those are the things that we owe our service members.
As you talked about your priorities, what happens if we don't focus on those things?
We have done a lot of things in the almost 3 years that I've been sitting in the seat, and I couldn't be more excited for the work that myself and General Brown have really helped to usher in, all work that our airmen really have been getting after. And while we've been busy on a lot of things from this office, there are a few things that we really have to pay attention to as it relates to the force of the future and what our Air Force is going to need, specifically as it relates to our people. And so I will put a lot of attention to the force of the future, military pay and compensation, as well as health care. We've got to get those things right. If we don't, I am deeply concerned about our ability as a nation to continue having an all-volunteer force serving in the military. And so all services are going to have to be really thoughtful in what that force of the future is going to look like. We're going to have to be really thoughtful as it relates to pay and compensation, how we recruit and how we retain today's service members and their families. We talk about it all the time, that you actually recruit the service member, you recruit the airman, but you retain their families. And so that means pay and compensation, as well as healthcare, are going to have to be on point. To be able to onboard the talent that we are gonna need to, again, be the military service that our nation is gonna need in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and 15 years from now.
If I could dig into that a little bit. So what are the measures for success? Is it just numbers? Is it the quality of service? Is it how long people serve? Can you speak a little to that?
You know, I love that question, because while military retention rates are high, particularly in the Air Force, I don't get excited about that. I don't get excited about the numbers. My focus is always on, are we actually retaining the right people? Are we retaining the talent that we are going to need to be the critical thinkers that are going to be able to outthink our adversary? And so for me, it is the quality recruit that we are going to get, and the quality airmen that we're going to be able to retain is very important to our nation's defense.
And so healthcare and military pay and compensation all play a huge role in that. But what role does culture and diversity play in that as well?
That is a great question. As it relates to diversity, what I would say to you is this: when I look at diversity and the goodness that we get from diversity, I look at it from a lens of whenever you can have demographic diversity, that's great. When you can have demographic diversity, as well as cognitive diversity, as well as a diversity of experiences, even better. When we don't have groupthink, and we have people who have diverse perspectives and are able to bring those perspectives to bear and are able to help our organizations and help our Air Force be more focused on warfighting and more effective, that's the beauty of diversity. And so I think we, again, have to open up our aperture to really appreciate what a diverse force brings to the force of the future.
And that does it for this episode of At Altitude. My thanks to Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, Joanne Bass, and all the airmen she represents who keep us free today and into the future. The At Altitude podcast is a production of Airman Magazine, headquartered at Defense Media Activity in Fort Meade, Maryland. You can find all of our content at airmanmagazine.af.mil, or you can look for us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Flickr. Thanks for listening. Until next time.